Welcome to the Art Talk podcast, where I discuss the stories that help us accomplish to be better artists as well as better art entrepreneurs. I am Karin Merks, your host, and I'm artist, art entrepreneur, and art coach or teacher. This is episode 54 of Art Talk, and today I have a special guest of who I am really excited that she is here with me today. So let me introduce you to Karen van Hooy Smith. Sounds so Dutch. She is an art director, mentor, and educator. And I had the privilege to meet her at a networking event in London, the Other Art Fair, and attended one of her strategy sessions with the VAA, the Visual Artist Association, where she is the mentor. She loves art. She says she can live on it. She is passionate about antiques, antiquities, history, the psychology of collecting, and that's what makes other people passionate. Welcome, Karen. I'm so happy to have you as my guest. Do I pronounce your name all right, Karen or Karen?
Karen, yes. We're Karen, yes.
Ah, great. Right.
There's a few of us in the world. Lovely. Thank you so much for inviting me onto this. I've been really excited listening to your previous podcast, and to be invited has been a pleasure. Thank you.
You're very welcome. So you definitely love art, and I've been involved in the art, and you have been involved in the art and antiques business since 1997. Yeah. And you have quite a list of accomplishments when it comes to art. What made you go into valuing art rather than making it yourself?
I think that's all down to teachers and confidence. People who kind of make those decisions for you, tell you that's not good enough, or you compare yourself to other people. And I've always had the ideas, but felt because I couldn't do what everyone thought was art, which was drawing, representing something perfectly, like photographic quality. I thought that was what art was. Maybe that's part of the Dutch as well, with with the background that we come from. But it was definitely at school, if you couldn't replicate exactly how that apple was, then you weren't an artist. So I think that really knocked my confidence. Also, I don't know, my brain works in a certain way. I'm very good at remembering when something's happened, what price something's gone for. I'm very quick at analysing something. So I can look at a painting and not just see a painting. I will go through every part of the painting, work out if they're, for example, the old Dutch interior scenes we used to see when we were younger. But I would look at the rug. How was the rug supposed to be at that date? Where is it from? Is it from Turkey? Is it from Persia, etc.? Was the furniture made out of mahogany? Was it made out of oak? I could just analyze every single part of that to work out, is that exactly the date? If it is exactly the date, what has been the current market valuation of that going over for the past 20 years? And then assess how much it is today. And I just found that bit to be quite easy and less judgmental. Mm-hmm. Because if it's an auction, it's an estimate. If you get it within the estimate, that's brilliant. If it sometimes goes higher or lower, that could be because you've got it wrong, or it could be because somebody's just got a lot of money at that time, or somebody is fighting against somebody else and they really want to have it. Whilst when you draw that apple and it doesn't look like an apple and you're told it's not an apple, then that's very personal. Does that make sense?
Absolutely makes sense. Absolutely. And it's amazing that you can just remember those details and those things. And yes, the Dutch art is the old masters. I'm trained that way. But it's not exactly painting what? Like a photo. That is that extreme realism. No, it's capturing, and Rembrandt was so good at it, capturing the emotion and capturing the psychology. Or even like Frans Hals, more frivolous with his brush strokes, etc. So, but it is interesting, and people are very judgmental when it comes to that, especially teachers. I've heard this story throughout all the episodes I did multiple times. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, with the Dutch painting, I was saying, I like also like the little messages they used to put in them as well. Mm-hmm. Finding the little secret messages, you know, why is that put there? What are they trying to put to? They're putting this with this person to make that person have a higher status than the other person. This person is clearly more important. And I love all those little messages and things like that.
And I did this one, the Dogen, they paint this portrait like in half. One half is the friendly man. The other one is, you better listen to me. I'm the ruler. And that is so, that psychology within a portrait really intrigues me.
Yeah. I wonder if many people notice that, or whether it's just you notice it straight away, or sometimes when you know something, you see it quicker. Does that make sense?
That absolutely makes sense, yeah. But you can see it. And we all have a different side, by the way. So, yeah. But as art mentor, you clearly make a difference in people's, artists' lives. And how important is it for you to help artists from beginner to professionals to make their way into the art world?
Incredibly important. I think a lot of it's not necessarily always helping them into the art world. It's helping look at their artwork from a fresh perspective and then showing different places it could be. Because most people, as I said, you're told, right, if you do an art, well, if you make it being an artist, because so many people don't make it. And this is what they're often told. And when you've left university, well, only about 1 in 5 of you are even going to be artists. And you think, God, no. And so then people kind of come out and they think the only way to be an artist is to really get into a gallery or get picked up by someone. Mm-hmm. But then you think there are so many different types of galleries. There are so many different types of public galleries. There are so many different types of art you can do. And I think you just need someone who can look at it and say, I think yours would work really well here, or I think this would just fit better. Have you considered this? And that's at all levels. You know, I do work with people who are completely and utterly beginner. They've always created, but they're at the beginning of an art career, as in they want to take this to another level, to get collectors, to sell artwork, and to let art pay for itself. But also to people of really quite high end, you know, who are working with public exhibitions, who are working, you know, selling to top collectors. Everyone just sometimes needs to have a chat with someone who can just see a better place in life.
Yeah.
Or really dig deep into that person and find out what would really make them excited. What is the thing they always dreamed about? Because there's nothing wrong with being a local artist. I think there was a whole thing in the 90s about people going, you should move on, you shouldn't stay where you belong, you should go and see the world. Local was kind of bad.
Yeah, yeah.
You can have a brilliant career. And how great is it to be going around your area knowing loads of these houses have got my artwork? All these children coming out, they've woken up in the morning, they've run downstairs and they've gone past something I've done.
Yeah.
This could be
and make them happy. Yeah. So important.
Hiring a new generation of kids, not necessarily to be artists, but to look at color, to get excited about things, to have judgment. Is that good or bad? Why is it? Why not? You know, lots of different things. And to know that maybe the local newspaper has your artworks going to be in it, or you've got local exhibitions, or slightly wider into county or areas. I think that's a brilliant thing to have.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree.
It was put down, and it's a very sustainable career.
Yeah, and that is the beauty of what you say and tell people, and what the VAA also brings out. Because, and you said it, I think, in one of the last masterclasses, don't fall for these programs to tell you you make 6 figures in 30 days, because it's nonsense.
Yeah.
And you see it more and more and more. Yeah.
Yeah. And what it is in any job, if you hear that, you're always told, you know, if it sounds like easy, it's probably going to be a bit of a scam, isn't it? But they're making the money because they're selling you the courses.
Exactly.
And then someone else is copying it. But, you know, I mean, fair play if someone does like that in a month, that'd be great. But it is. It's difficult. I think we need to help people to help themselves, really. Give people a bit of a path. And like I say, the VAA for me and what we do is more like you're on a marathon, but you haven't realized you're on a marathon, right? Because when you're creating, you're doing a Play-Doh and you're on plasticine, you're doing this, you know, you're creating. And then suddenly one day you're like, I'm going to have an art thing, but I've got all this art. And people panic. I think all we do is we stop you and go, right, have you got the right shoes on? Are your laces tied up? Let's make sure you've got the right things in that backpack. Here's a map. Okay, let's work out which route you want to take. Now, it's going to be a marathon, but there are refreshment stops, okay? You can pace it. Some of it's going to be sprinting and some of it's going to be long. But now you know you're on that marathon. You know which way you're going. You've got the tools in your backpack and you've got the right kit on.
It makes so much sense. And I think it's so needed. And that is so special, because what makes the VAA so special in comparison with a lot of other of these associations or all these ways of trying to tell people or tell artists, okay, do this, then you will become that. Do this, then you will come. VAA is something special. I mean, I found it and I felt like, I could pull my hair out. That I didn't find this earlier, because something opened there for me. You're not aware, right? A lot of the times. So what makes it so special for you to be there? And
it's having that guiding hand that isn't. I mean, the VAA and I, one of our first conversations was how frustrated we are that universities don't give the practical advice. Even something like how to get yourself tax numbers, how to do basic accounting, how to even know what different careers and things out there are there. Because just because people think an artist are the people at the very top, it's a bit like saying you can't be a footballer because you don't play for Real Madrid or you don't play for Liverpool. If you play for a town, or you play for Bristol City or Bristol Rovers or one of these, or Oxford City, still an incredibly good and high level that you're playing at. You're still in the leagues, but there's nothing wrong with that. And I think that's what that assumption for universities is. You're either going to be that or nothing. What they don't say is people have different motivations for their art. They might really like painting a certain thing, and someone will go, well, you know, that's not very highbrow. It's you're just painting, you know, pictures of Marilyn Monroe over and over again. Yeah, but you know what? Some people really like to have pictures of Marilyn.
Absolutely.
I'm not saying anything of that. Yeah. You're painting someone who was an iconic legend. You're painting someone who was a piece of art herself in the cinema, and she was treated almost like a sculpture.
Yeah.
And you're all kind of doing this in different ways. It's got a part of your personality, your viewpoint. Every single thing that an artist creates is going to have that filter of how they have seen the world. Every experience they've had, everything they see goes through into their head. But most people, it goes through those filters of how you view it, into your head, and that's it. You guys have got a paint factory at the back or a creation factory, and somehow managed to translate all of those things you've seen, all of those life experiences, positive and negative, bring them out and then come out with a representation of it.
Yep.
They can be joyful or whatever, but it's phenomenal that that can happen. Why does that's come out, why does it have to be something that has to be gold and gilded and put in a cage? Why can't everyone like it? Why can't I go and work with a publishing house? Why can't I go and be a book illustrator? Why can't I just go and work locally? What, there are all these different options. And why aren't you told these different options? And why aren't you told the practicality of how to start it up, how to photograph your art, how to hang your art, how to describe your art, how to approach people with a letter or a conversation? This is all stuff that would be incredibly useful to know.
Incredibly useful. And this is what the VAA makes so special, also to me as an artist. And God, I was reading that book, Good Art Doesn't Sell Itself, and I'm looking forward to the next edition. And I had like, crikey, yeah, I've done this. I've done, what? I can do this? Okay. This, what? A journalist? Me? All these things. And you know, it's also because on an academy, they don't even teach you anything about how to sell your art, how to come out there. And I had a conversation when I did my MA art history with a museum library, head of library, and he asked me, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm growing my art business. Business? So yeah, I'm an art entrepreneur. We all are. Is that you should know how many people still send us emails every single day hoping the museum can buy their art.
Yeah.
We don't even have room enough to store the art we already have.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's so important that people of all level know where they are, because I really believe for everyone there is a space,
Yeah.
Somehow. Yeah. And you, your work there specifically, what do you teach artists or how you mentor? You are the mentor of the VAA. What is it that you mentor when they come into your
program? I think I'm probably doing it a bit wrong. I think I'm supposed to do it in a different way. I think I'm supposed to, as a mentor, go, hey, what do you want to do? Let's write some ideas and I'll guide you a bit left and right. I get really involved. I do quite a deep dive with people because I find it fascinating. We send people a questionnaire first. It's really good. It makes you panic because it makes you write down what artwork you've got, what you've sold, where you think you are now, all this kind of stuff, what qualifications or courses you've done. But I often find that people will write what they think they should write,
what
they should do.
Yeah.
So I love seeing that. Sometimes people are just blatantly, brutally honest, and they do know where they want to go. On the whole, I think people are just want to follow a path that they think they should, and they don't know.
Yeah.
So I tend to, sometimes it can be a bit of counselling session, but I would just, because I can see really quickly, I don't know why, it frustrates me. When I see artwork and of children and teachers can't read it, frustrates me. It is
that is really a problem we have nowadays. Yeah, and children also wanting to draw realistically when they have the age 8, and then there's no teacher who can teach them. Yeah, I can teach them special program, but it is annoying that
kids are really honest with how they play and what they draw. And they will often draw what problems are happening in their life.
Yeah.
They'll often demonstrate, you can see through art and doodles what that person's going through.
Yeah.
And I wish more people knew that, because I find it so easy to see that. And I just don't get that people don't. So when I'm talking to a lot of people, I can often, through their art and their conversation, work out when they've had a sense of rejection, where sometimes that trauma side, or where that negative side has come from, where that block is, or why they think that. And whilst we don't need to discuss that, because that's obviously quite personal, but I can kind of tell pretty quickly
what
that is. And then when we do that, we would discuss and work out what the plan is. Go down to the root, find out what it is they really want. Or if they already know that, then it's just a case of showing them how to get there. And so I don't really teach and say, you need to do this, we need to do this. This Let's get from, let's work out where B is. It's always good to know where A is. Let's work out where B is. In simple terms, you can reverse engineer that. Don't rely on every single step, because in life, sometimes you try something and it fails. And as a life as an artist, it's not necessarily fail. It's that first attempt in learning. You know, it's not a fail. It's just something to learn from. But the more steps you have in place, if one of those doesn't work, then you're not going to plunge because you've got another one.
Yeah,
or an alternative. So it is about putting those gentle steps in to help you get where you want to get. Now, if something feels totally unrealistic, you go, it's good to dream, because it doesn't mean, life is about the journey. It's the route from A to B. It's not getting to B. If you want to get to B, you just need to be going towards B. A lot of people will go, do you know what? It was great. I had this passion of being in Tate Modern. But actually, what I've done is, I don't want to be in Tate Modern. I do want to create the artwork that I think should be in there, or I want to be in there, or I think should be represented. And I want to do it at the quality of that. So I've done things to a better quality. I've done things that I know people who would visit that place. I know people who support that. I know some of the trustees now, but I don't necessarily think I want my work in there, or their collections acquisitions policy at the moment is not going to work with what I do, because the funding has changed quite dramatically at the moment, and a good job, really. Museums and galleries are trying to fill in the gaps in their collection. So say, for example, I think Tate Modern, I went there, 96% of the studies of nudes were of women, but only created
by men.
26% were created by women. Yep. So just in that balancing, I mean, obviously, this is Tate Modern, though. You know, if I was talking V&A, I'd go, well, you kind of understand, because to start with, in the academies, it was very few women. So they're gradually catching up, you know. But now, most of them have a completely different acquisitions policy, and they need to address that. So maybe you're not going to get in the Tate anyway, just through timing. But aim in that direction and put those steps in. So that's kind of what I teach or guide or help people. And then we've got all the other information from experts that, you know, I learn every day still. Do you?
Yeah, of course.
Something new every day. You don't just go somewhere and stop learning.
No, but that's the point. You need an open mind.
Yeah.
You need that open mind. And I'm I'm here all ears, and I have like, okay, absorb. And that is what I had since I entered the VAA, because you're looking here, looking there, looking. So this is so important. And it is good to know, and it's good to see. And I love what you do. I had a mentoring session with you, a strategy session. Yeah. And it's so much, but it's like.
Yeah. Well, I think sometimes it's a lot, but just take the bits you need, because through one of those sessions, which, by the way, kind of show you that long overview of the things that need to be done.
Yeah.
Every person's going to get a different thing out of that. The penny drops at some point during that hour for everyone. A penny goes,
oh.
And then they go, oh, my head's exploding because Karen's been talking to me for a whole hour. But there's always one thing you'll take away.
Yep.
And that's just that gap, or that, oh, wow, I just thought I was going to do this. I could do that. I've talked to artists before and that have worked on kind of art that would be on your wall. But the way it's created, this kind of kinetic art, we've had conversations and we decided to explore and see how big we could get this. And honestly, his work, we're trying to get it into like airports or into hospital places that can be public art, large scale, changing the way that people interact within their environment.
Yeah.
And at first he was like, no, I want to go back to selling things on the wall. And I'm like, you don't have to go this far. But if you know how far there is to go, you just bring back from your travels and put that passion or that sense of engagement into that smaller piece. But it's good to know what it could be or envisage it.
Yeah.
And could it do something? And if legitimately you think, do you know what? I don't think I'd want to do that. I don't think I know how to do that or want to try that. I actually don't think it'd be that good for public engagement, or I think cars would probably crash if they saw that. You know, but at least you've explored it. And when you come back with all that knowledge to that small thing, you look at things in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
Is this high quality? I love my artwork. I think I've done a brilliant job. You go off and explore in your mind and you come back and go, yeah, I really need to. I need to improve that a bit, or I need to.
That is the journey, and it is so beautiful. I mean, I have here in this little room, I have my art around me, working on pieces and finished, just varnished, and then I sit here and I look around and I'm like, wow, okay, I love that. I love it. I see a piece here and I'm like, oh, okay, now I see it. That was just a little bit off. It is this beautiful journey you do.
Yeah.
But it makes so much sense when you go with them, and because you see and feel where they come from. And that is, I think, the most important thing. Why do you do what you do?
Mm-hmm.
We have this deep-seated why we do what we do, right?
I think it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. In fact, I'm doing a whole big project myself, personal project on it, because I just find it absolutely fascinating that I call it Mark and Spark. There are two little things, and this is the whole reason. Do you know the reason why I got onto this journey? It was I was on a school trip to the Centre Pompidou in Paris. And being a slightly petulant 15-year-old, I think I was looking at some black and white etchings, which at the time were not interesting me. And there were a lot of them, a lot. So I walked off and I just thought, I'll have a little nose around. And I went around this pillar and there was a sculpture in front of me, and it physically stopped me in my tracks. I felt it in my chest and it was like the wind was taken out of me, and I started crying.
Yep.
I didn't know who the sculptor was. I didn't know why. Why did I have that reaction? It was Constantine Brancusi's Bird into Space.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think of it, it's an incredibly modernist sculpture, which, you know, as a Dutch family, I grew up, you know, with carpets on tables. I grew up with an appreciation maybe for some loose things. I grew up with a lot of silver and pewter. You know, I didn't grow up with really contemporary sculptures. What was it that made that happen? How did that artist somehow manage to communicate? And it's got hardly any lines in it.
Yeah,
that's what I've been chasing that whole time. But also, what was it that made that artist want to do that? You know, you don't see this in other animal kingdoms so much. You know, you might see people picking things up, actually purposely alloying metals to create a sculpture, which they then have to heat to thousands of degrees, to then let it cool, to then varnish it and like burnish it and do all of this. What makes us do that is fascinating. Because I guarantee first person in cave going around their hand with pigment wasn't thinking, this will make my cave more worth more money.
No, of course not. But that is the whole thing, right?
We want to not only tell the stories, but we want to visually depict them to show people.
Exactly. It's fascinating.
Maybe a lot of people didn't have good hearing. Maybe they had big tigers roaring in their ears and they needed pictures. I don't know, but it's fascinating that we have that feeling inside us that we need to create. All children want to create. All children want to put their hands in mud. They all want to play with crayons if they don't have them, or they'll scratch stones against things and make marks. There's that intrinsic thing that we do. And what I admire about artists is they keep going. Yeah. And let's face it, it's one of those careers in the world, probably the only one, that you get constantly told you're not good enough, constantly told, when are you going to get a proper job? I don't think you should do that. Why do you keep a hobby? You can come back to it when you're retired. Oh, isn't that lovely? But it's not a real job, is it? If you're battling against someone constantly telling you, I mean, you wouldn't say to, a dentist, a kid that likes that, and go, no, you really shouldn't be a dentist. Please don't. You're looking in people's mouths all day. You should definitely be an artist. No, he does that. Nobody tells the kid to not be an architect, to not be an engineer, to not be a scientist. You know, this doctors, everyone says, oh, it's great to you. Everyone wants to be a doctor. I don't like this one in hospitals particularly. I don't think I'd want to be a doctor. But you don't tell them you shouldn't do that. You should definitely just be an artist instead. I find it fascinating. Yeah.
It is. It is very fascinating. And let me tell you.
You guys keep going.
the art, what art does to our health is incredible. So ruling it out as useless is the biggest mistake ever made. And I'm currently reading a book, Your Brain on Art. You have no clue what your brain is doing on art, but it is massive. I can tell you. It's so healing.
Yeah.
And I do not create art to heal. I create art to empower women, to address social issues, etc. But to make people happy when they have it in their rooms. But it is the aesthetic experience that you, what you had with that Brancusi, that you stop and you feel it in your chest. That's what art does. And that's why art is important.
Now, 30 years on, I still feel it when I remember it. I can still tell you exactly. And interestingly, for someone who's quite creative, I have aphantasia, so I can't see anything in my mind. If I close my mind, I can't see any images.
Mm-hmm.
Strange. It's like there's a black curtain there. But if my eyes open, I can absolutely 100% describe what it looked like, how it felt, the whole situation. Because I my memory works through all the other senses, randomly more than visually, but I'm a very visual creative person. I can still feel that exact moment, where it hurt, how I felt, how embarrassed I was crying, just going, well, that's a bit pathetic. But for something like that, 30 years to have made such an impact. And this, you often hear this story about people. Even I was in hospital, I was visiting someone and I was looking at this and I had that sense of calm, relaxation or sense of hope, or, you know, I was just looking at something and it made me laugh, made me really angry. You know, they're just the simple feelings. And then you've got the tonality of it. You've got the depth. All of that is doing something. Looking left and right, you're using your delta waves. You're using different brain waves when you're looking at art. Yep. How close you are to it, how far away you are to it from it. It's amazing what it actually really does.
What it does is
when people just
absolutely
go, it's just a picture on the wall. It's just like, it is a picture on the wall. You always know, I say to people, you know, it's not just a picture on a wall, because if you take that picture down, you're the first time you put one up and then you've taken it down, so you're going to paint or you're moving, it just feels wrong without it, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I need my own paintings around me too, and the paintings I have from others, if I have them. And
are your paintings, are they friends to you, your paintings? When you look around, do you feel that sense of, I've got my friends around me? Or
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, I'm currently painting a series of musicians, and I'm painting a Dutch violinist. But when she's playing, so I don't capture them from a photo in the sense of, I do this differently. And I hear her music. I hear it.
Mm. Do you know, that's really interesting. There's a lot of artists I've worked with that they see music. In fact, Kandinsky...
Yeah, I see colours. Yeah.
I was reading, like reading for like, I was into about 3 o'clock in the morning reading Kandinsky's 1912 theory about spirituality and art. His manifest, it's brilliant. But he does a lot about seeing colours. So I wondered if he was synesthetic to start with. Or whether that's how a lot of artists see, because he was like, when I hear something, I see the colours of it. And when I, you know, feel...
Not everyone has that, no.
Oh.
But I can tell you that sometimes I have this synergy in smell and seeing and colours and hearing. But also when I talk with people for a commission, or I create an art book and I let them tell their story.
Yeah.
I start to see the colours that I need to use.
Ah, that's interesting. There's another artist, Kirsten Todd, who for my daughter, I commission a portrait of her every 5 years. It's my plan, rather than getting all the school photos. Mm-hmm. So the recent one was also by an artist who did that. So when she kind of taps into the energy of the person, that's when the colour palette comes out for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? I wonder, could you do a study to find out how many artists might be on that synesthetic level? Or how many people do that, just as a poll or something? Find out how many of you see colour or hear colour.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting.
I find it fascinating. When I lived in Japan for years, and I had this beautiful garden. And I thought to myself, I think I'd read somewhere that people, Flight of the Bumblebee, the composer, where it came. And I thought, do you know what? I've never really tried to hear music or see that in nature at all. So I did this little experiment with myself where I'd always not properly meditate, but sit there and just try and listen. And it didn't come for a while, but then when it did, and I'm not musical. It was like suddenly something was switched on. I could hear like the ding, 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 ding of the rain. And then it started to have different things were coming up. I was like, wow, I wonder if that's how composers do. Now, then I went, oh, my God, I can do it. So then it went away, because you've got to be.